he's been lights out. You know the funny thing about it? We're talking about just the one game. We took two out of three from the Yankees, two out of three from these guys, and we're talking about one bad inning. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, maybe we could have taken him out. Yeah, all that stuff, but he's one of our best relievers. You got to trust somebody one time and, you know, let him get out of trouble. But again, it was a great road trip. We did an outstanding job. Two out of three. Doesn't get any better than that, of course.
All right. Well, I wish I could. Wish I could over the next hour. I had to present you with something that might take your mind off the Leafs' eventual win tonight. Because, you know, it's going to happen. They're going to win. Mm. But I just don't want people to spend all this time. Yeah, I'd like this hour to be your hour where you can breathe, maybe think of something else, take a load off. And I thought yesterday after game one, I thought, you know what would be great? Come in here, doubleheader sweep, and we could say to people, hey, you know, we got you. You know, let's talk about the Jays just for an hour and doubleheader sweep. And Ross Stripling, where the hell did that come from? And then the second game of the doubleheader happened. Kevin Barker. Mm. Now, look, this is all... we're going to talk about a lot in the show. Joe Stittle's going to... We got to talk about Marcus Semien, because Marcus Semien's an unbelievable... he's had an unbelievable month. And I'm going to ask you a question later on. At some point, if you're the Jays, do you say, you know, maybe we kind of keep this infield together here, as opposed to letting Marcus Semien go and then having to go into the free agent market and maybe get Javier Baez or maybe get Carlos Correa. Maybe. We got this guy right now. This guy is a free agent. We got sole negotiating rights. Anyway, we can talk about that. We got to talk about the relief pitching. You heard Charlie Montoyo at the start of the show. Charlie got a little bit of the red ass there.
He did, didn't he?
He got a little bit of the red ass, which is good.
Welcome to the party, Charlie.
That's good. That's good.
Is it?
Yeah, I like it when the manager kind of fires back. Good for him. I'm not saying the questions were wrong. I don't think they were. I think they were entirely appropriate.
Yep.
And I think yesterday was like a second guesser's paradise. So let's start. We'll leave Ross Stripling aside. Well, no, I'm actually going to bring that in. Because here's my simpleton take on this. Ross Stripling was pitching so well that if you send him out for another inning... And let's say he gets out of that inning. You send him out for another inning. Mm-hmm. Then you close the game with Dolis or Romano. You've kept one of the two for game two.
There you go.
You know, whoever it is. Now, that was my initial takeaway from this. Mm-hmm. Because I think Arden Zwelling pointed out in his piece today, you know, the bullpen ERA this month is almost double what it was last month. Like, this is not a one-time thing. And that's why I told people, everybody's excited about Alek Manoah. Alek Manoah is not going to solve this problem. Mm. He'll solve a bit of it. He's not going to solve this problem. Mm. Anyhow, so walk me through that. Am I right there that if you send, let's just say, you send Romano out in game one, you keep Dolis for game two, boom, now you're set.
Okay, yeah, listen, if you want to make that argument and you wanted to run Ross Stripling back out there for another inning on the road after he'd only given up one run, sure. Me, look, if he gives me five innings with one run on the road, I take that every day of the week and twice on Sunday. And then I go to my bullpen, especially in a seven-inning game. And I have a rested bullpen with a day off coming up. I know there's another game. I know it's a doubleheader. But I have another day coming up. Here's what I'm going to say to you. I'm with you up until the sixth inning. So they run Dolis out there. It's 3-1. Okay, he gets through the sixth inning. It's still 3-1. The Blue Jays come in at the top of the seventh inning. They score a run. They have Anthony Castro getting loose in the bullpen. They have Jordan Romano getting loose in the bullpen. My thinking was, if it stays 3-1, Jordan Romano's coming to the game. Common sense, right? It's a no-brainer. You can work that through. Sure. Anybody can manage through that, right? Now, all of a sudden, the Blue Jays scored another run. Now it's a 3-run lead instead of a 2-run lead. Why was you not bringing Anthony Castro with a 3-run lead with 4-5-6 coming up in the order for the Cleveland Indians? Now, 4-5-6 for the Cleveland Indians is not 4-5-6 for a really good lineup. Okay. It's the Cleveland Indians. So if you got Anthony Castro on your team, would you rather see him pitch a one-run game or come in with a 3-run lead? So that way, now you've used Dolis for the sixth inning, and you still have one of your best arms in Jordan Romano for the second game.
Can I ask you this? Okay, you had Jordan Romano up.
Yep.
Is there a concern that, And I we're not there, so I don't know, you know, Jordan Romano's workload or anything. Is there concern that if you get Romano up and don't use him, you can't use him in the second game? You know what I'm saying? You got him up, now you shut him down.
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think once he pitched, he's had 2 days rest between the times he's pitched. He threw eight pitches on the 27th.
Okay.
So it's not like he's thrown a ton of pitches and he's thrown a ton. He's had 2 days off.
Okay.
Him up, and all you have to do is you bring in Anthony Castro, you call down the bullpen, you say, I want Anthony Castro, bring him in the game. After the game, you go up to Jordan Romano, you go, you know when I want you in the game, right? With a one-run lead, and we want to slam this thing shut and take two games away from a really bad team. Cleveland Indians not a good team. When Shane Bieber's not on the mound, they're not a good team, end of story. Like, we can sit on here and say it any other way. Cleveland Indians is not better than the Toronto Blue Jays. Agree?
Yeah, not close.
Then there you go. So now you call a guy in the office after you got him up, got him hot, and the reason why is you tell him. Two-run lead, you were coming in because you are our best reliever right now. Tyler Chatwood can't find the plate. He's not our best reliever. You are. I want to bring you in when it matters. Three-run lead, I'm going to a guy that I think can get us three outs with three runs because
All right.
He's got a good enough slider. He's got a good enough heater in the lineup. Quite frankly, he's not real good.
Okay, so we've talked about the combined impact of game one and game two. Now let's focus on game two. So Charlie's done that. Okay, Charlie has done that in game one. He's gone Dolis. He's gone Romano.
Yep.
Done deal. How do you handle that situation in game two then? I'm on the same page with you about Castro. Now mm-hmm. that I hadn't thought of it at the time, but now that you mentioned it, yeah, okay. I just took the easy way and said, I don't want Dolis and Romano both working in the same game of the doubleheader. Then I was thinking, you know what? Maybe it's one of those things. Hey, you only manage the game in front of you right now. You don't wait for game two because a lot of things could happen in game two, yada, yada,
yeah,
et
cetera, yeah.
et cetera. So, okay, I'm with you on that. Uh-huh. Anyhow, but Charlie made that decision, or whoever helps Charlie make those decisions, made that decision. I really do wish sometime they'd put the dudes in khakis up in the interview room so we could freaking talk to them, or R2-D2 or whatever the hell the computer's name is. That's another story, though. But mm-hmm. That's happened. So game one's done. The die's been cast. How would you have approached the second game?
Well, okay, it'd make you wonder how much confidence he's got in other guys, and it'd make you wonder if what's going on? Where's AJ Cole? That would make you suspect that, for whatever reason, why is he not in the game? Right? Dolis again is for the second game when you're bringing in Tyler Chatwood. Tyler Chatwood with all the walks. For me, when I watch I haven't talked to anybody. I'm just going by what I see. The stuff's there. I mean, his four seamer is 97. His sinker is 96. It's consistently at those two numbers. His cutter is 89 to 91. His little get me over curveball that he occasionally throws halfway decent. Not a great pitch, but halfway decent, right? He can get away with those kind of things. He was fearless the first little while, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not fearless now. You can call it whatever you want to call it, scared, not trusting his stuff. Whatever you want to call it, he ain't there with it. So what do you do after he walk? He came out, he got out of the sixth inning, he walked one guy.
He walks in the tying run, and then he
walks four guys in a row. So what do you do? You know, you AJ Cole, where you at? Dolis, look, can he go back-to-back games? He threw the 23rd of May.
Right.
He threw 13 pitches in the first game.
Well, basically, that'll
make you wonder.
The evidence suggests that we've got a bunch of worn-down arms right now.
Maybe.
Wasn't Carl Edwards on the
Yeah, but he just got there. So he had an ERA like 81.
Yeah, but can I ask you a question? He just got there. For what?
Well, probably not to come in a one-run game. That's right.
Okay. You know what I'm doing. I'm playing devil's advocate.
And Tim Mesa stinks. I mean, I can say it nicely.
Yeah.
Not very good right now.
Not very good.
And Anthony Castro, again, is just another guy. You agree with that? Just another guy,
yeah.
Right? So it's that when you don't have confidence in other arms, you know, and obviously they've had to get – obviously Charlie and Tyler Chatwood had a conversation after the game with Tampa Bay is, if you're going to take me out in a big spot when I've been halfway decent, right, I'm not doing what I have been doing early in the season because I'm not pounding the zone, I'm not trusting, and whatever it is between my ears, I'm not doing. But if you're going to bring a guy in, don't bring in Travis Bergen. Right, that's sort of the conversation they had, and he seems to think he's one pitch away. Right, he got an out on a little lazy fly ball to left field, so he got one out, and then the floodgates open because he can't command anything. What do you do when you don't have trust in going to other things? Now, obviously, obviously, your manager can get a guy up as soon as that. They can have a conversation and say, and we know what you're going through, and we know what you've been through before. We know how it's been. We've seen it. We've seen that you can go off the rails in a hurry. And it's sort of looking like that's the way Tyler Chatwood's going to be. So at least if you're going to bring in Anthony Castro, get Anthony Castro up to start the seventh inning. That way he can sort of follow along with Tyler Chatwood. Don't get him up after the first two walks, and then you're trying to get him in a hurry, and then you basically bring him into their best hitter, Ramirez. And we both know that Anthony Castro is not good enough to bounce a slider in front of the plate to try and get a guy who rarely ever strikes out.
Yeah, you know what? You know what he's going to do. You know what he's going to do.
He's going to put the ball in play.
Exactly. Here's the other puzzling thing. I will admit that the Jays bullpen has had a big workload because of the issues we talked about with the starting rotation. But, Kevin, they've had rainouts. Like this gets to your point about the lack of effectiveness. It's not like these guys have been asked to work 2 days in a row or 3 days in a row.
No.
You know who's really missed right now? And I feel like slapping myself in the face because I just thought this guy was not David Phelps. I just thought he was another guy when he was here. I just thought he was whatever. He's
Ryan Borucki too. Guy. Ryan Borucki been somebody yesterday you could have went to. Right, you know.
We're not hearing anything. By the way,
who knows? You know, forearm. You start wondering what forearm could be. It's Tim Mesa. What's he bringing? You know that would have been a guy maybe you could have went to flip a switch hitter around to his right side who would rather be hitting left handed than he would be right handed. But do you have faith in Tim Mesa?
Let me pause at this. The Tampa Bay Rays are 15-1. They went out and added J.P. Fireisen. Yep. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to solve. Well, you know what? He'd solve a lot of the Jays' issues.
Yeah, but let's be honest.
No, but let me finish. This is what I was saying when I was telling people that Alec Manoah is great. Love Alec Manoah, et cetera, et cetera. Alec Manoah is going to help you one day and hopefully take the load off the bullpen. But the idea that Alec Manoah is somehow going to allow four bullpen arms to suddenly get better is not on.
No.
And there's a reason the Rays went out and made that deal. And I still believe this, and I'm not saying this is the wrong thing. The Rays are the defending American League champions. They see their window of opportunity wide open right now.
Yeah.
They went there. They got to the World Series last year. So their GM is looking at a team trying to get back. This team, and again, I'm not criticizing Ross or Mark by any stretch of the imagination right now because they feel what they feel, but I really think that what we're seeing here is a sign that this team is not yet ready to sacrifice a little bit of the future. And I'm not saying Jordan Groshan, so don't go there. Mm. But they're not willing to sacrifice a bit of the future to help right now. And we can put two and two together.
Yeah, it puts more pressure on Patrick Murphy's and the Thomas Hatches and the Julian Merriweather's, which is who they're hoping to get back to pitch high leverage situations.
Yeah, but Julian Merriweather, with all due respect to him, you know he's going to blow his arm out again.
Exactly what you just said. The in May or first week of June, you're not going to go out and get key guys. Just not going to give them to you.
No, but you can do what Tampa did. You can add a guy who makes you better.
Tampa gets to these games and wins a lot because they think differently than everybody else thinks.
That's fair.
And everybody else knows it.
That's fair. That's
why they are all, well, not always, but they seem to be one step ahead of everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why it's the little engine that could. How can you run out a lineup that you run out there that continues to win what they've won, 15 out of 16? Who can do that other than the Tampa Bay Rays? And I will say about the Blue Jays, and if you're Ross Atkins, the Yankees are the Yankees real good? Probably not. If Gerrit Cole's not on the mound, are you really afraid of the Yankees? So this is the window's open for the Blue Jays is my point. And how do you piece it together? Because the games that they're supposed to win, they have to win, right? You got to figure, look at their schedule coming up, Jeff. They got to two with Miami, three with Houston, three with the White Sox, three with four with Boston, and three with the Yankees until they get to the Orioles and Seattle. So they got a lot of really good teams coming up that the bullpen's going to be asked to do things in high leverage, right? They're going to hand the ball to whoever they're going to hand it to.
590-590 is a text line. Please include your name and location. I want to talk about Ross Stripling. Dan from Aurora writes in, and he's not the first person to say this. Maybe Charlie said to himself, "You embarrassed me last game, so show me what you got, TC. It's all yours, no safety net."
They've obviously had a conversation. Tyler, basically, I'm thinking, I don't know this for a fact, but walked in that and said, "You can't be taking me out for Travis Bergen. I've earned the right to not be taken out like that. Again, I'm struggling right now. I can't find the strike zone." So,
okay. Mike in Edmonton sees things a little differently.
Okay.
Said, "I really don't mind Charlie's pitcher decisions on Sunday. He aggressively pursued a win in game one. In game two, he gave a veteran, Tyler Chatwood, the opportunity to work things out. The rest of the bullpen isn't great right now."
You win and lose with your best. That's basically what Mike's saying.
And that's I said. I don't agree with it, but I understand what the thinking was in game one. I understand that, although, you know, if it's me,
I don't know why you bring Jordan Romano in. It's a 3-run lead. If Anthony Castro if Anthony Castro cannot get out three Cleveland Indians hitters.
Is that a sign
to you? With a 3-run lead, it tells you that Charlie has no trust in anybody except two guys in that bullpen. Right. That's what that tells you.
Let's talk about Ross Stripling in the first game. Joe Siddle joins us at 2:40, and we'll go way back into Charlie's decision-making. So don't worry, we're not candy coating it. We're not moving on from that. We will come back to it. The Jays have today off, by the way. They start a series in Buffalo tomorrow. So let's talk about Ross Stripling. There were people out there who were ready to run Ross Stripling out of town two starts ago.
Ross was ready to run himself out of town.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was not a happy camper.
No.
All right, he's made an adjustment with his delivery.
A huge one.
Explain how that simple adjustment makes the same pitching arsenal better.
Confidence.
Isn't there a mechanical thing that makes the ball break better?
He seems to think that he was tipping his pitches. If he seems to think he's not tipping his pitches now, and that would give him more control where he wants to throw it. Now, I will say, the Rays look like they were late on the heater. I mean, it's 91-92. It ain't 102. Mm-hmm. It's 91-92. And so was Cleveland Indians. He go middle of the way. Location yesterday on the fastball wasn't great. He was getting a bunch of the plate. Now, again, it's the Cleveland Indians, but he did do the same thing against the Rays. And the Rays like to hit homers. They strike out a ton, but they hit a bunch of home runs, right? And he was getting a bunch of the plate with the heater in both of those games. That would tell you. And you get a little confidence. You start telling the guy, if you do this, leave your hands down here. And when you kick your leg, it's very hard because of where you're running your hand down your leg. It's very hard to pick up the ball for a hitter. And they're seeing it late, and it's getting on them a little more. And your 91's playing up to 94, 95. Now, he'll occasionally hit 94 like he did yesterday, but he's basically pitching at 91, 92. He didn't throw a curveball to the fourth inning yesterday.
Yeah, and then and what I liked about yesterday's game, I liked the way you're right, the Indians aren't a very good team, but I liked the way he approached them. I like the changes he made.
He basically said, "You're not a very good team, and there's a reason probably because you can't hit a hitter."
It's almost like he pitched two different games, isn't it?
Sort of. Like the first time through, he was getting ahead with the fastball. You establish that. You don't have to use your best pitch, which is his breaking ball, until he has to. Second time through, that's when he started flipping and he would get ahead with it. Mm-hmm. Me, I didn't think he had to. Keep continuing doing what you're doing. But it just seemed like the Blue Jays had a plan, and they were thinking 7-inning game. My bullpen's well-rested. I got my big two guns down there. We're going to think about how winning the first one, and we're going to scrap to figure out how to win the second one. That's basically, they lined it up exactly the way they wanted to line it up, right?
All right. Meanwhile, the Jays are going to be 15-13 this month. They were 12-12 last month. They're 27-25, two games over.
It's not good enough. Their lineup's way too good. Their defense is good enough.
But let me throw this at you. We know, and I would urge people to keep this in mind. I understand that there's visions of that team playing a not very good Cleveland Indians team are still fresh in your mind. This team's had a hard, hard schedule.
It's going to get hard too. And they're coming up.
Yeah, but they haven't had the Detroits yet. They haven't had the Baltimores yet.
Nope.
They haven't had the Seattles yet. So they're two games over 500 right now. I just think we need to keep that in mind. Because people are flaming the manager here of a team that's two games over 500, which is kind of, honestly, this is where I thought they'd be. I thought they'd be maybe a little worse off than this because of their schedule.
Okay, seriously. A little of the flame of the manager is warranted. You could question what he did yesterday. It's okay.
Oh, it's fine.
I'm not
questioning the questioning of the manager. That's fine. And as I said, that was Charlie's answer. What I really need, and maybe the next time we talk to Ross, just ask him this question. Ross, when something like that happens, how much blame do the nameless, faceless analytics guys get?
It's a great question.
I understand that it's a collaborative thing, and that's the way the game is now. I understand that.
Okay.
That's fine. But my point is this. Does Charlie have the freedom to say, I'm not doing that.
I'm going to say that this was more Charlie. Usually I'm on the side of that part of it, where it's analytics and we've basically scripted it out. And this part of the lineup comes, this is who you're throwing, this is who you're getting loose. But it's just funny that Anthony Castro got loose both times when it mattered.
That's true.
And Dolis didn't, A.J. Cole didn't, Tim Mesa didn't. It was the same guy. Make you wonder.
Is Charlie saying to the front office, get me some freaking arms in here?
Or he didn't have – it's one of two reasons. He didn't have a choice, or he don't trust the other guys.
All right.
And to your point, get you some – what'd you say? Some guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious when you don't have David Phelps. David Phelps and Ryan Borucki, that's a slam dunk. Like those three, the games they just played against Cleveland has no chance because of how David Phelps can locate and Ryan Borucki can eliminate you with the sinker and the slider. He eliminates you. Mm. So they would have no chance. Anthony Castro's not pitching. So, yeah, it's... You're throwing a lot of the times, unless Dolis and Romano can go back to back, you're throwing it against the wall and you're saying a huge prayer when you do it.
590-590 is the text line. We are going to break. We will come back, talk about Marcus Semien's unbelievable May. I do mean unbelievable. And we are led to believe that George Springer will be in a Blue Jays uniform sometime before September 1st. So we will revisit the question. When, if George Springer comes back, what do you do with a guy who, along with Vladdy Jr., is going to be a candidate, should be a candidate for player of the month in the American League? Don't go anywhere. Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Well, have yourself a month of May, Mr. Marcus Semien. And Barker, he hit .368 this month. His OPS was 1.130. His OPS plus was 214. 8 home runs, 22 ribbies. Struck out 33 times, walked 12. The first month and a bit of the season, in 24 games, sitting .211. The hell happened?
Well, I mean, there's for me, it's a couple of things. Pitch selection's been really good. He doesn't like breaking ball. He's hitting .111 off the breaking ball. That's a breaking ball and a slider. You know, there's probably reasons for that, but the one thing that stands out to you is he's hitting .352 off the fastball.
Don't throw him a fastball.
Well, it's easier said than done where he's hitting the lineup. I do think Dunedin has helped him confidence-wise tremendously. I heard Siddle a lot talking about he's staying inside the ball. He's hitting the ball a little bit more to right field. I think when you go to a place like Dunedin and you see the wind blowing the way it is, and you think, I don't have to do a ton. All I got to do is hit a little bit of the bottom part of the baseball. I can create backspin, and I can it keeps my barrel in the hitting zone a little bit more, and that gives me tons of confidence. Now, I don't want to hit the ball over there a lot because I'm not going to be great at it, but I can hit it over there enough that it gets me better pitches to hit to where I can be repeatable, quiet, quick, and level with all of those things. And if I just swing at something that's straight, I got a chance of hammering that thing. And I know I'm going to get strikes when it matters. Now, it may not be a fastball, but I can get – you get a fastball about 55% of the time. You know, you can throw flip a coin in the air, and 55% of the time, you take your chances on seeing something straight, right? Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You know, you look around, you go, oh, Bo's standing there behind him's Vladdy. I got a pretty good chance. They don't want to walk me. 3-1 counts, I'm probably not going to get a slider. 3-2 counts, I'm probably not going to get a slider. I might get a changeup. But it's probably not going to be a slider most of the time. Now, occasionally I will because that's the guy's best pitch. But most of the time, if I can just zone in and not chase that and think right center because I've gained so much confidence of leaving Dunedin, that little tiny park, that I got gave me so much confidence of hitting the bottom part of the baseball that's keeping my barrel in the hitting zone now. And I do all of those things with my lower half, and I'm short and quick the way I am. Question is, when your $150 million man comes back, now there's no question you paid him that amount of money to lead off. But does Marcus Semien hit second or sixth?
Well, that's the first thing. The easiest thing would be to drop everybody down the order. But here's the thing, and this is where it gets complicated. We just saw Bo hitting behind George Springer for a few at bats. But yep. You commented on what a combination that could be. What an absolute
controlled
combination.
Aggression,
would be.
It looked. You see the big old giant swings he takes down? I'm not saying he didn't take those all year, but you could tell they were a little different.
He was a different hitter with George Springer in front of him. Small sample size.
Yeah.
But he was a different hitter with George Springer in front of him. He looked like a different hitter.
Yep.
I do not want to touch Vladdy. If Vladdy comes to me and says, I want to hit 15th in the order, I try to figure out a way to have a 15th spot in the order. Basically, I'm doing whatever Vladdy wants. Huh. Teoscar, why? Why would you take him out of the line?
He's the one guy for me that you're not moving. Vladdy, I don't think cares. Vladdy's going to hit rolling out of bed. He'll know.
But, Park, it's so good right now. To me, the guy you can move or you'd consider moving, and this is silly, but how many RBIs does Grichuk have now?
38, I think.
That, to me, is where you start thinking what you do with Semien. So, do you put Semien in front of Grichuk? Do you just do the easy thing and put Semien after Grichuk? Now, who's hitting behind Semien? All of a sudden, you've exposed Semien maybe a little bit.
He's going to get more spinners.
He's going to get more spinners. And what did you just say?
He's hitting 111 off the spinner.
Bingo. So what do you do? Who do you sacrifice? Because essentially that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're saying to somebody,
I think you get six guys in a room and you ask them point blank, if I move him here, would you like it? Would it bother you? Does it mess up your routine? Do you care? Like hitting in front of this guy?
What if every okay
Randall?
What if everybody says yes?
Bo's not going to say yes if he doesn't. You all know right. Bo enough, well yeah, enough. He's going to raise his hand and say, I don't like it. Or Vladdy's not. Vladdy's the one guy I don't think cares. You know, Domingo Germán sort of messed up Vladdy a little bit. You see his front foot now. He's choppy.
How did he mess him up?
Because the ball's moving all over the place. He's throwing it from a weird arm angle. I think the shadows got him. He's chasing velocity a little bit the last couple of games. You can see him. He's out in front. He's overswinging. He hadn't been doing that for a while. Now, again, it's... You know, look, he's 22 years old, and that's just the way it is. There's going to be ups and downs. Teoscar might be the one guy. Teoscar's the one guy that takes pride in being the cleanup hitter.
And
that's going to be a tough sell for Teoscar.
And one of the things this organization was very clear about from day one in spring training, Charlie said,
yeah,
Teoscar's my cleanup hitter.
There you go.
He didn't say that this guy, especially when Springer went down, we might do this, yeah. They said Teoscar is our cleanup hitter.
I think it's more about hits and who hits in front of them than they care about who hits behind them. Does that make sense? Like, I care, if I'm Vladdy, I care more that Bo's hitting in front of me. I don't think Bo cares. Bo's approach is not going to change. He thinks he can hit it from ear to toe. He doesn't care. It's not going to matter who's hitting in front of or who's hitting behind him. I do think the George Springer thing is going to matter a little bit for whatever reason. He seems to quieten down his little, you know, as hard as he swings. Now, can he consistently do that? Probably not. He's 23 years old, and he thinks sky's the limit. And there ain't a pitch he's seen that he don't think he can barrel up. But me, you want to hit 300? You're going to have to tone that down a little. That's just me. But when do you walk up and tell him to try and do that? He's got 11 and 32. You just don't, you don't rock the boat quite yet on that. But everybody else, it'd be an interesting thing, right? If Marcus Semien continues to do these things, can you walk up to Marcus and go, hey, I appreciate you doing all these things. I appreciate you winning.
Here's
the month
sixth
of,
spot.
The player of the month. Yeah. But can you go to the sixth spot for me and do, I know you changed positions coming here.
And
can
you're
you
a
also
free agent.
Move down to the sixth spot.
And you're, this is,
you're going to get pitched differently.
And you're there. A free agent. You're Marcus Semien wants to make money this year.
You think Marcus? Well,
what I'm saying. Marcus wants to make money this year, and Marcus is saying, hang on for a minute. I'm going into a free agent year where I'm going to be lumped in with dudes like Correa and Javier Baez and Trevor Story, and I'm hitting 360 whatever in this month.
What if I walk up to him and say, I'll give you 3 for $60? That'd make it a little easier for him to go to 601.
It was my next question. And I know we're going to get ahead of ourselves here, but that's okay. It's sports talk radio.
We're good at it.
You know that the Jays are going to be players in the free agent infield market this year. We just know. They're going to be looking at a Correa. They're going to be looking at Baez. I mean, they should. They kicked the tires. They did more than kick the tires on Lindor. They did more than kick the tires in Didi Gregorius. Yeah. So clearly this is, and we've talked about Bo. Anyhow, just if you're the Jays, here's the thing. If the Jays deep down think that next year it's going to be player X at shortstop and Bo at second, deep down, let's say deep down they think that. Why wouldn't you go to Marcus Semien? Marcus Semien's not 120 years old. And you know what? Look at it this way. Instead of giving Carlos Correa 9 years or 8 years or 6 years, you go to Marcus Semien and say, we'll give you 3 at $60.
Yeah.
And we'll come in and we'll let shortstop, we'll let the position figure itself out.
Well, why look if it's right in front of you? And I don't think they're moving Bo.
No.
Bo's made enough adjustments as shortstop.
But this is the thing. Okay,
But
that's the thing.
This is just me. The only way I'm going out and getting that guy is if he's left-handed.
All right.
They need balance.
Yeah. And
if there's not one out there, why go out and pay another 50 or $60 million to get you what? Much more would Javi Baez do than Marcus Semien does?
Get your balance elsewhere. Get a lefty hitting outfielder.
Or three bullpen arms. Like, I don't know.
Charlie, what do you want right now? Left-handed hitter with three bullpen arms.
Are you kidding me?
590 is the text line. Jeffrey and Kokomo. Sir Jeffrey and Kokomo.
Nice.
Jesus. He spells his name Jeffrey wrong. Guys, what about we didn't ask about this. What about Dolis going 2 innings? Did you think about that?
I'm sure they did. But there's a reason. That's why I said to you guys before when I came on here that he hadn't pitched since the 23rd of May, and he threw 13 pitches. They're not going to go back-to-back innings with him, and that's probably why he didn't go back-to-back games. But May 23rd, that's a long time. That's 6 days between outings.
There's a lot of discontent out there about Charlie Montoyo today.
A little of that's warranted. A little of that is you think it ahead a little bit to – I know he's probably not trusting a ton of what's going on in the bullpen, but if you don't have to use your best two arms, why use them when you can get away with using an Anthony Castro?
Well,
with a three-run lead.
Joe Siddle spoke about this a lot during Blue Jay Central and talked about the decision to bring Stripling out, et cetera, et cetera. Joe Siddle will join us after we break, and we'll continue this discussion. And I'll let Mr. Barker and Mr. Siddle hash this out, because there is some disagreement here. Because I think Joe's a little bit with me on letting chicken strips go out for the... I think that's his Twitter handle, letting chicken strips go out for another inning.
Let me ask you a question. Who would you call him? Chicken Strips goes out and he gives up a bloop and a bomb. Everybody's stomping their foot going, you got a healthy bullpen.
Well, you and Siddle deal with that. Joe Siddle's next. I'm just going to stand back. I'm going to be the arbiter. It's going to be a big debate, Siddle and Barker. I'm just going to sit back.
Siddle with his big words.
It's Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, we have no name here. It just says from Wellen. Just wondering your thoughts on moving Bo down to fifth when Springer is back and Semien goes to number two.
Fifth.
We talked about
not fifth because the Randall Grichuk's earned the right to stay where he's staying. He loves hitting behind Teoscar. This is my point: is you have to be real sure that Marcus Semien is going to be here next year if you're moving around Bo from not being around Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the lineup. You'll be real careful with that.
I'm just going to throw this number out, too, because it was something we looked up during the break, and we'll bring Joe Siddle in. Joe, thanks so much for joining us. I just got to throw this number out because it's rattling around in my brain. I talked about how I thought Bo, even in a small sample size with George Springer back in the lineup, I thought Bo looked different. He was 7-for-22 in games where he was hitting second and Springer was leading off. Now, that's 3.5 games. But my point is, and he struck out, I believe, 3 times in those games. So I just wanted to throw that out there. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I was with you. I was watching, Blue Jay Central, and my first reaction is, why are they not sending Stripling out? And then, you know, we've talked about how that bullpen imploded in game two. And my argument was simple. If he had sent Stripling out for one more inning, Barker's right, maybe he blows up, maybe he doesn't, though, in which case I don't have to use Dolis and Romano, and boom, I go into game two, and I've got one of the two arms that I seem to trust in the bullpen.
Mm.
I got him available as opposed to having used the only two arms that I trust in the bullpen in game one. I mean, it seemed easy to me.
Mm.
Well, nothing's easy, guys. Pleasure to be with you. I think, as we all know, being a big league manager, the correct decision is the one that works, right? And, you know, Jeff, from all your days covering teams, if you were to go into an office after that game, you would want that manager to have a pretty darn good reason for what he did, right? I mean, if I'm a manager in the big leagues and you ask me how that game was just lost, I'm going to tell you why and the method behind my madness. And for me, if I'm a manager, I am losing with my best. And yesterday was a different day because it was a doubleheader. And I am going into yesterday, I think, managing two baseball games. It's different than any other day. Now, the situation the Blue Jays were in, of course, with all the rain and the 7-inning games and bullpen not being needed because the starters were going deep, that's all great. And it's interesting, the one thing I didn't mention yesterday, Hazel and I talked about it on Blue Jays Central, with all of the rest in the 7-inning games that the bullpen has had, I actually went the other way and saying, you know, it's going to be a challenge for Charlie to keep guys sharp. Because I know there's a guy down that bullpen. These guys always want to throw, and when they're not getting into games, that can be an issue. Now, I don't think that was the issue with Chatwood, though. But going to game one, Stripling's cruising through five. He did give up the homer to Naylor, and I get it. And, Kev, you are right on the nose when, you know, hindsight's 20/20, right? If you send him back out there and he gives it up, everybody's going to do the whole third time through the order. Here we go. This is Blake Snell in the World Series, though. So, to me, not to compare Stripling to Blake Snell, but Stripling was absolutely in cruise control. Put the numbers away and watch the game. I know people don't like to hear that because the old numbers don't lie. Well, whatever hitters are hitting against Stripling third time through, to me, not that day. Not that particular day, not against that particular lineup. If they do that top of the order, and it can happen fast, and I think that's why we see a lot of panic with bullpen moves. Because Charlie has said it before, and other managers have too, it can unravel in a hurry. In fact, in game two, it unraveled on Matz in a hurry, didn't it?
Yep.
He was in cruise control. And so it can happen fast, and I get that. But I am going down with my best, and I think Stripling deserved to go back out there. And this isn't like a pat on the back to Stripling. I mean, it's just like, I've got two games in this day. If I can win this game with just Dolis and save Romano, or if I close this one out with Romano because I feel strongly about it, I still have Dolis in game two, then I'm going to do it. And again, hindsight's always 20/20 because if you send Stripling out there and he gives it up, you're in trouble. But the whole Chatwood, that's a whole other incident. And my thing with Chatwood is that when he blew up against the Rays, he at that time was your best reliever. He was slam dunked. And that's why I felt he deserved the chance to blow that save, as funny as that sounds. And he got pulled before he got that chance because he was one pitch away. He, as bad as he was, be the first to admit, he was one pitch away. But yesterday, this is a different Tyler Chatwood. He's coming off of two appearances where he's clearly shown you, and it's been a history in his career, that command can be an issue. And that's why I said the red flag should have been up. I don't mind Chatwood coming into game two. But keep an eye on him in that seventh, and I know everybody's talking about, yeah, have Castro or whoever up earlier because he did block a guy in that sixth inning, and then sure enough, he gets the first out in the seventh, but then it was like he lost. He wasn't close with a lot of pitches. So you got a day off today. Why not have somebody up? Why not have Castro or Cole, whoever it is, but some backup plan so that I'm not going to lose that game with Chatwood imploding because we've seen it, and that turned out to be the third appearance in a row it's happened to him.
How about this backup plan? I disagree with you a little bit about the Ross Stripling. I think if you can get five innings out of him with one run, look, you'll take that every day of the week and twice on Sunday. But that's okay. Your argument's a good one, too. That's a solid one, right? But I will say this. Whenever you get Jordan Romano up in the first game in the seventh inning, and you got him and Anthony Castro, and they score another run. So instead of a two-run lead, it's a three-run lead. Why can't you just call down? You don't have to wrap Jordan Romano in bubble wrap. He's gotten loose one time, right? You don't make a habit out of that. But the one time when they score an extra run, call down and say Castro's in the game. So that eliminates all your thought process going into the second game. Do you think they can do that?
Absolutely, because on that note, I think if Romano warms up a bit in the bullpen but then sits down, I think he's available for game two.
Yeah.
But because he pitched in game one, and I never did hear any reasoning, but it was clear he was not available in game two. And the reason was most likely that he pitched in game one. So I just don't think they were going to pitch him in two games. But absolutely, if you start warming up, even if you heat up and sit down, I think you're still available for game two a few hours later.
Okay, let me ask.
I don't think there would have been any reason for that.
That's a great call. Let me ask you a question. When George Springer comes back, we all know he's going to lead off. There's no question about that. But what do you do with Marcus Semien? If you're the manager, now again, I know it's HP departments and they're going to give their thoughts on where a guy's supposed to hit. But if you're going to raise your hand in the classroom and say, I want Marcus Semien to hit, what would you say?
I would put Marcus Semien second and drop Bo down. And here's why, guys. Marcus Semien is a dead red fastball hitter. And if you drop Bo, let's put it this way, if you drop Semien down there, they could start spinning it to him and pitching around him. If you got a Gurriel or somebody behind him, even if it's Grichuk behind him, I think Bo can handle that.
Drop him down to where? You said drop him down to the three spot or drop him down to the six spot? There's just a big difference.
No, not three. No, I put him down to 5-6. I put him with Grichuk. I either go Bo 5, Grichuk 6, or Grichuk 6, Bo 5. I think Bo can handle more of the mix of off-speed and fastballs, and he hasn't been as good on fastballs this year, but I think he can handle that better than Semien. So if Semien stays up there, I think he gets more fastballs with Vladdy batting third, Teoscar fourth. Whether you go Grichuk, Bo, Grichuk, I'm easy, and then Gurriel.
Now, he's 23. That'd be a tough sale. You'd have to be a good salesman to sell that to Bo.
Man.
You know how
Here
they are.
Go. Here we go again.
Well, it's 2021. Jeff. It's not when we played. It's not 2000.
It is, but you know what? How about if you sell it to him the way I just did by saying, Bo, he's arguably a better overall hitter than Semien. Now, clearly the numbers don't show that, but what I mean by that is he can handle more. He can handle if guys attack him with the fastballs. And again, he hasn't been as good with the heater this year, but like Semien, I can't believe the fastballs he's still getting.
Yeah.
Are people not watching the same game we are?
Well, I think
it's unbelievable.
I think they're looking at exactly what you said at the guy standing on the on-deck circle. That gets
Absolutely.
Him something straight. Yep. Now, it may not get him as many, less something spinning, but it gets him something straight in a fastball count, right?
Yeah, and that's why I keep Semien, too, after Springer. Springer's the leadoff hitter. I don't even know why that's a conversation with people. I heard you guys talking earlier. Yeah, I know it's not with you, Kev, but no. It's not even a conversation. He's your leadoff hitter. And then for sure, I would, when that question comes between Semien and Bo, I would go Bo, slip him down to 5, Grichuk 6, or vice versa. But Semien stays number 2, so he gets more fastballs up there.
Joe, really good of you to join us today in an off day. Thanks so much, my friend.
Way to go, Joe.
Always, always fun, fellas.
Take care. Joe Siddle of Blue Jay Central.
It'd be a tough sell because you know what he's going to say. Hey, coach, I'm hitting 270 with 11 and 32. I like Vladdy. Me and Vladdy are sort of a package deal. You want to put me down a six hole? Will Marcus Semien be here next year? I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do at shortstop. It's not the year 2000. It is 2021. It makes a little bit of sense. You're trying to get the fullest out of everybody possible in your lineup. But Bo's one of the guys that could be an MVP on your team. Moving him down to the sixth spot when he's doing well, that's a tough sell.
We got two pretty good pitching matchups tomorrow, by the way, or in the Marlins series, a brief series. Tuesday, Robbie Ray against Sandy Alcantara. And Pablo Lopez against Alec Manoah on Wednesday. Now, Pablo Lopez got a 6.20 ERA. He and Luis Castillo of the Reds, two guys that the Jays have kind of sort of had interest in the past, not having great years. But that's going to be fun. The Marlins throw some pitching at you.
Yeah.
The Marlins throw some pitching at you. The games are going to be in Buffalo. 7-0-7 first pitch.
Solid defense. They're going to have to get some timely hits. And the bullpen. Who's going to be that unknown name?
Yeah,
can it
I don't
be
know,
Carl
man.
Edwards Jr.?
I don't know.
Maybe it's him.
I don't know. There was no name in this text. I'm going to throw this out there. There was no name in this text. What about Nate Pearson in the bullpen?
Was that changed the fact he can't throw strike one? Like,
what if Nate Pearson puts it together in AAA. I mean, I can't even believe I'm saying that because I know what the organization thinks of him as a starting pitcher. And I think you're perfect. Having Nate Pearson and Alec Manoah both part of your rotation and pitching well solves a whole hell of a lot of problems. I get that. But.
If he consistently throws 99 miles an hour as a starter and you're okay with him throwing strike one with that pitch,
all right,
then I'm okay with that. But boy, you're begging. When would you give the ball to him? That's the question. You okay with him coming in out of the stretch with first and second with a one-run lead in the eighth inning?
I just mentioned it because I know that
they're piecing it together. I'm telling you, with the Patrick Murphys and the Thomas Hatches and the Julian Merriweathers, like, again, you're throwing a bunch of names against the wall and you're saying a lot of prayers.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So much for that. Hey, look, we're all looking for answers, man. We're all looking for answers.
They're a good team. And they're fun to watch lineup-wise.
You hate
to waste it. And the Yankees aren't real good this year.
J.P. Fireisen's ERA is under 2 in 5 games
since the
Rays got him.
Whose is it?
Just saying. 15-1. Raise up, everybody. Raise up. 15-1. I like my bet. My bet's looking real good. My bet with you is looking real good. Barker will be back tomorrow. We'll get you set for the Rays and Jays.